Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this May the 14th on the West Coast, already now May the 15th on the East Coast. So nice to have you here with us tonight, and we got to cut the microphone in the studio, wondering if you guys are actually going over the air. Anyway, we're hearing some conversations in the background. Thank you. Lots of things in the news. I had very recently a prophet on my show by the name of Matthew Stephen, and Pastor Stephen was telling me about some revelation that he's been given by God. And he's been talking to God for a number of years. Now, many of us do. Some of us don't hear the answers when they come. In his particular case, he has been responding to these answers by writing things down and then going out speaking around the country. And he has been very accurate in the prophecies that he's brought forth. He considers himself just the messenger. The messages are given to him, and he shares them as they come. He talked about a recent trip to several Midwestern and Eastern states. Particularly, he mentions being in Ohio, as well as in the state of New York. And he talked to some serious church groups there, and the folks listened to what he had to say. And he was told that there were certain places that he would go and touch the ground with his staff. He has a particular cedar staff that God instructed him to take with him, much like the one that Moses and other prophets have used throughout the Old Testament. And he touches the ground where the Lord instructs him to, and he prophesied when he was in Ohio that there would be an earthquake somewhere in the Midwest within 14 hours of him having touched this particular area that God had instructed him. Well, it wasn't too much longer afterward that there was a 5.4 earthquake, which was predicted by him, that occurred in the, I believe the epicenter was somewhere in the state of Illinois. And someone from Indiana called him and told him that the opposite point of that particular earthquake actually, we're imagining if you drew a line through the epicenter straight through the earth, that it would take you to China. And there was recently a very, very severe earthquake in China. He fears that the number of people are going to be in excess of 30,000 dead from this catastrophe. We wonder if we'll ever hear the actual number that have died. Now, I want to make it clear that it's not Pastor Stephen who has actually caused this destruction. He merely touched the staff in the manner and at the time when he was instructed, and says that basically God is bringing certain kinds of judgment on people in various parts of the earth, particularly due to how governments are handling situations. And much of it also has to do with the way people react to the message of repentance. He talked very seriously about repentance. Of course, we have talked about that on Evident Footprints in the past. It's your personal way of coming to God and and receiving forgiveness and mercy for the sins that you have committed. Now, there were those that tell us that they are Christians, and if they were to repent for their sins, I would have to trust that God would forgive them, but on the basis of things that have been happening, things that they are doing, orchestrating, any allusion to the fact that they are repenting or have ever repented are pure nonsense if we just look at what is going on in the world. And so he says those times are upon us that we are going to be experiencing God's wrath, and this has to do with him finally addressing the saints, the children of God who have been praying for solutions to the insanity on this planet, and it's worth a serious look, let's put it that way. Pastor Williams will be on Evident Footprints next week on the 20th as a follow-up show, and we may have an update on any new revelations as well as just going into more depth about his experience. And with that, I would like to sort of segue into tonight's guest and tonight's topic. Last week, we had spoken about Freemasonry and the beginnings of the American Constitution, the beginnings of America, and how this land was chosen to be a model for a new type of government on the planet. I know tonight we're going to talk about how we likely have strayed from that focal point. Tonight's guest is a health consultant, health scientist. He is an author, an herbalist, a musician, and a very good friend of mine, Mr. Michael Anthony. Michael, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Thank you, Don. Good morning.
Yeah, I should say good morning on the East Coast, isn't it? It's already Thursday.
That's right.
Well, it's been a couple of weeks since you were on the show, but we had an interesting talk the last time, and we were talking about Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. And it seems like daily there's more stuff coming out about the Masons and the connections that the current political candidates and those that are pulling the strings have to Freemasonry. Any remarks that you want to make about what we're seeing right now and how that plays into this age-old secret society?
Well, Don, it's definitely, as you say, a system that's employed by those in power to perpetuate their agenda. And it's manifesting today primarily in the system of control and exploitation and suppression of individual liberties. And, however, unfortunately, the original, intentions of having secret lodges wasn't necessarily just for evil, as we covered in the first discussion a couple weeks ago, that, ever since the beginning of time as we know it, which is really from the fall when time began for mankind, that there was this knowledge of how things were at the very beginning when everything was perfect and man possessed various abilities that he no longer has, and these abilities would be considered supernatural, superhuman, and Adam and Eve, of course, were the origins of all that. And so this knowledge had to perpetuate itself in various manners and through all the time up into modern times. And, of course, these manners were secretive. And so now you have this knowledge that is secret being perpetuated over time. And ultimately, as always down here, you have two polarities. One intention, one force is to desire these secrets to utilize for themselves for selfish purposes in order to gain control over their fellow man. And the other school was interested in possessing this knowledge to liberate themselves individually, to become better men than we are as mere mortals, but to acquire these abilities and become better men for themselves, just for their sake of bettering their own personal lives, not at the expense of anybody else. And so today, pretty much everything's diluted, and now the dark forces have the upper hand, at least it sure seems that way, and they are utilizing these secret lodges, which are now basically all evil and corrupted, these schools, and for perpetuating the secrets, and they keep it amongst themselves, and they're clearly using it all for technology advancements and everything else that can be utilized by them to secure an agenda of total control over mankind, and really all creation, actually, which is definitely part of their whole agenda, not just mankind, but all of creation. They want it under their feet so they can do with it what they will.
Mm-hmm. Michael, I wanted to address one particular issue of Freemasonry and the concept of the lodges. First of all, they have what they call the Blue Lodge, which consists of the three first degrees of Freemasonry, the entered apprentice degree, then the second one, which would be the fellow craft degree, and then the third, or the master mason degree. But these degrees go up at least to 33. I've even heard that some of the so-called 33 or 33rd degree Masons at some point even rise to a higher number, and that mm-hmm. this is very secret amongst the Masons. But in the context of the first three, those are the people that are really not shown everything. They are of the mindset that they are following Christ, that they are being Christ-like, but they have some special message about the miracles that Christ performed, and that these are available only to them. And then there is a point in Freemasonry where it's readily admitted, even by Adam Weishaupt himself, that they're very Kabbalistic in their approach. In other words, they're following the Kabbalah as opposed to the Bible. And they use the argument that these are parallel paths. In fact, Jesus himself can be represented within their system, just giving him a different name or describing the experience of knowing Christ and knowing what he taught and the secrets about what he taught that only they have access to. And when we consider that seems to be a contradiction. And in fact, I tend to think that the reference and they call it Hiram, okay?
Hiram a bit.
Yes. Okay. I mean, Jesus is Jesus. Why give him another name? If you want to say Yeshua.
Well, see now, Don, the only thing is that is just one particular aspect of Freemasonry as far as how it's known today. That's just one particular aspect, whereas what people just need to understand is, like with everything else, you have schools. There's many schools, all by different names. And so those that are this Hiram Abiff and all that, yeah, that's obviously very questionable, and what they're trying to teach their students. But The facts are that out of all the schools, which were many, some of them did possess the whole truth and were perpetuating the real sciences. Because, again, even the Kabbalah, that's just the Hebrew science of trying to understand God's way of doing things. That's what that is. And so it always comes down to science. Everything is science. And everything that the Lord taught his disciples was a science. Very, very sacred, could not be written down. And so there were a few limited schools over time perpetuating the true knowledge. And the only requirement of acquiring this true knowledge and the ultimate abilities that the Lord was passing on to his disciples was that, of course, you have to pass all the tests. And so, like with every school, you have what you call, Don, again, the outer rings of the school, and or really they're novices, the cellas, the adepts, and then the masters. That's really what it breaks down to: kindergarten, elementary, junior high, high school, college, graduate, go for your masters, of course, and there you have the master. And so it's always the same basic structure of perpetuating a technique for perpetuating the truth and making sure that the higher secrets, the final capstone and knowledge required to put it all together so the sciences are, the ultimate sciences are at the disposal of the advanced student. What is necessary is that they pass all the tests. And so the real legitimate schools that were in favor of the Lord's way of doing things, they would test all their students the same way the Lord was testing the disciples. And then as they graduated and were able to acquire a higher understanding of how everything really is in reality, structurally, in creation, then they would be given the additional lessons until they eventually had it all. And that's the way it always has been and really is to this day. Unfortunately, one of the major roles of the communists was to destroy every school system that was perpetuating any form of truth. And so they've succeeded over the past 100 years. They wiped out every school around the world where there was a master teach a student type of relationship. And ultimately, the last remaining area of a schooling type system was Tibet. And that's why the communist Chinese had to invade Tibet and shut them down, because the communists don't want anybody acquiring any notion about how things really are and what's was really being taught in the real schools ever since the beginning of time. They want it all to themselves, and they want the masses in darkness and ignorance, not knowing anything. And that's exactly where we are now today. And so the real understanding of schools or anything, like here as Americans, the Americans don't really understand that before there was public schools, all the schools were private. And how did a school come about? Well, you had a really good teacher. Like for yourself, Don, in the old days, because you're a maestro, then you would have your own school. And then because you're such a great maestro and everybody wants their students, their kids to be your students, or they themselves to be your student. And so next thing you know, you got so many students. Well, you have to set up a bigger building. You need more room. That's a school. That's how it always came about. All around the world, it was the same approach to establishing a real school where there was a real great teacher that knew his topic inside and out so well that people wanted to study under him. It's only in the 1900s that everything became under government control and quote-unquote public. And so it's not coincidence that, of course, at the same time, these new types of schools no longer teach anything about the truth. It's all about really keeping you in the dark and social engineering it.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the context of me having my own school, if it got to the point where it was larger than what I could handle by myself as a teacher, then I would have to hire, another teacher or other teachers.
That's right, Don. But those teachers that you would be hiring as you were expanding due to your success and notoriety and fame those new teachers you're hiring, guess what? They're your students that were your better students that were mastering the topics. They're the ones you're hiring, just like every other school would have. It would have been their best students sticking around to become future teachers.
Yeah, well, the point I was going to make is at that point, do I become negligent of how the school is run because I'm so busy and allow the concept of Satan or the concept of evil to take it over and actually be the focal point, which is...
Don, not while you, while you're around, it won't happen.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
When you're gone, and the next set of masters that you left behind are gone, eventually, that your school will be corrupted like most other schools, or it will be destroyed,
well,
one or the other.
Yeah, one would think that if I'm operating in the highest principles, that would never happen. If I'm able to continue that to the next generation of teachers or the next...
But down here, you can count on it happening because corruption is the ultimate end of all things down here. We can't find anything in history since the beginning of time where something has not been corrupted that was good. Even David, the Lord's apple of his eye, sinned against the Lord and was, and even though he wasn't punished, all his children were, and he had to suffer due to the, what his children had to pay for due to his sin. And Solomon, most favored, David's son Solomon, became the greatest of them all, and yet he sinned against the Lord. And so corruption is the rule of thumb here, and it's always expected eventually. That's why the good masters are always on the lookout for that evil shadow creeping in so they can step on it quick. Mm-hmm. But when that great master's gone, the lesser masters take over, and then after them, lesser masters, and eventually corruption takes hold, no problem. The United States, everything has been the same way. Israel of old, the United States today, started off great, all in all, with great principles, great ideals, that would help resolve the mistakes they made initially, such as slavery, and bring the Union tighter together over time. All the principles were in place, and it was working that way, and yet corruption by the 1900s got to the point where everything started to be taken over by forces that have an agenda that is totally negative. And so now our whole government today is so corrupt that abroad, and for example, some Muslim countries may refer to us as, you know, we're Satan, and we know Satan is here in our government, the Bushes, the Clintons, the Rockefellers, they're all devil worshippers and doing the bidding of Lucifer. We know that, and yet we're not participating in that. So it's not fair to say all Americans are.
Oh, no, no, that's not at all what I'm saying.
No, I know you're not, but my point is that foreigners could view us as all that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what happens when corruption sets in, because once it's established itself, then the good that is remaining is barely visible. And if it doesn't reignite itself, it will be extinguished by the dark forces. That's the way it is down here. Corruption always takes over eventually.
Well, yes. And one wonders, is it just because of our refusal to take responsibility and do our part individually as that's occurring? Now, just as an example, it didn't take us 100 years to submit to corruption, and yet those who were high in Freemasonry in Europe had a big influence on the changes and still have that type of influence today. Just recently in the major article that I'm writing and in the research that I did to draw some conclusions about who some people are and who was actually pulling some strings, I came to the realization that three and likely four, the four presidents that were assassinated can almost all be tied to one figure in history. And it's a pretty profound revelation because it gives me what I've uncovered. And let's just say that this pertains to three generations of Americans or so-called Americans and who sent them here. that it reveals that there is, and I'm only being cryptic because the article is yet to be published. But once it's published, this is going to come, you know, a full circle out in front, and it's going to have to be looked at. But let's just say that is it a coincidence that you and I have been talking about Freemasonry as recently as your last appearance? I think it was, wasn't it on May the 5th?
Yes, I believe it was.
Yes, okay. We spoke about Freemasonry, and what I noticed is that all the key players in the research I had done were Freemasons.
Mm-hmm.
And not that what they were doing was an outward expression of Freemasonry. It was definitely behind the scenes, and it was very deceptive, very misleading, very concealed, and in a sense, maybe in their minds, they thought it was a good thing, but it was for their own purposes, and there was no consideration about the rest of the people, you know, the inhabitants, the citizens of America. Not only those generations, but future generations. It was all about personal wealth and greed. And they picked some doozies to play these roles, too. They were very controllable people. So, I'm speaking kind of philosophically at the same time I'm addressing the issue that that I saw for even President Kennedy. I could look at the sequence of events that transpired, let's say, over a 100-year period. Actually, it's a little over a 100-year period. 103 years, to be exact, that all this occurred. And I could see how even President Kennedy was part of, played a, let's say, a connected role without even possibly realizing it. And, you know, that will become clearer when I don't have to speak so cryptically to not give away the way of the content of the research yet.
When history is studied with microscopic scrutiny, then how much overlap there is between all the characters on the stage, all the actors, it's just incredible. It'll go so deep that it'll confound most people. And that's just a part of what it's all about down here. We're wrapped up in an interplay, a drama, a battle between two forces that's been going on since the beginning of time. Nothing's changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's really important with covering this particular topic of the history of the United States, what I want your audience to appreciate is that the United States was a special country when it was birthed. And just like Israel of old, it had divine activity all around it that brought it into being. Now, since the beginning of time, there's the legend of the immortals. And the immortals were super beings. All the wonders of the world, the seven wonders of the world from ancient times, and all those are relics of their civilizations. Mortal men had nothing to do with the Great Pyramid or any other kind of truly staggering monument that's a relic of antiquity. Only a genius was able to devise and construct such monuments. And what their overall purposes were clearly proved scientific, had a lot of scientific merit to it and value to those people. Now, at some point in time, these immortals disappeared. And we had the semi-divine, semi-immortals that lived for a very long time, but they weren't immortals. And then after they were gone, then we just had the mortals to live for a short span of time. So the semi-immortals, the semi-divines, were trying to follow up with their ancestors who were more perfect than them, just like then modern man, the mere mortals, for the last so many thousand years, they were trying to mimic the semi-divines and try to at least carry on their knowledge so they could have some kind of civilization that could rival the previous one so they could live so luxuriously. And so what you have is when the semi-divines were gone, it was just mortals, the Old Testament comes in pretty much after the flood. And now what you have is a lot of divine activity, angelic activity, in the affairs of men. So today we think God is sitting somewhere and he's not around and he's way out there somewhere, but that's not how it is at all. God is constantly active in the affairs of man every day. And it's our history is replete with all the evidence. And so in modern times, in the Old Testament, real quick, just to give some examples of angelic activity, sometimes they seem right in the heavens, angels on horses, dressed up in armaments for battle, and they were jousting with each other for 40 days straight, up in the heavens. Everybody on earth was watching this affair going on in heaven, all wondering what it meant. And of course, many angels coming down and acting with man, living with him, doing some deeds, and then reveal to themselves at the very end, I'm really an angel of the Lord sent here to help you, and now I have to leave. And they would just disappear. And they would also make statements like, well, you thought I ate your food, but I really didn't eat it. You just thought I did. And so they make it very clear how they are divine beings and really don't have anything to do with mortals except to assist them in their activities, but they don't eat their foods. They don't have anything to do with their customs at all. And so now, that's the way it's always been, this angelic activity. And we can see in our own recent modern history with the birth of this country, because there was so much divine angelic activity surrounding the birth of this country and the founding fathers, George Washington, most notably, French and Indian Wars, outside Pittsburgh, the British get wiped out, and George Washington's one of the few survivors, and he takes off his coat, and four musket balls fell out from inside his coat, yet he never got touched by the musket balls when he got shot, never got harmed in any way. And all during the Revolutionary War, these guys were protected with mysterious fogs that would ooze out of the ground on a midsummer day, preventing the British from capturing the Continental Army and closing the war out. And so, or rivers would crest and swell like from a storm out of nowhere, so the British could not cross. And so that's clearly all divine activity. And it was obvious that these founding fathers were surrounded with it.
You can recall, Michael, that on a past show when we talked about the eight musket balls, that I remarked that sounded like somebody got some bad musket balls.
Yeah, right, and they were all duds. They were milk duds.
Of course, you know, I understand that he had been divinely protected.
And, that's right.
And I see that. But see, there's a dichotomy. As I'm listening to you talk, and you're talking about the divine and then the semi-divine, and there's a downward spiral in the in the stature or the level of divinity that plays, I guess.
No. But you're right that there's a downward spiral, because that's how it is in this imperfect world since the fall. Everything will spiral downwards. Instead of, like they're teaching us today, we're evolving upwards. We're more evolved than the ancients. Mm-hmm. But they know that's not true at all.
I mean, it's come down to Andy Divine now.
Yeah, know? That's right. And so they know.
Nothing against Andy. I'm just.
They know from archaeology, Don, they've found tombs with lights still lit up for 2,000 years in these tombs. There's all kinds of archaeological discoveries that are so mind-blowing that they're secreted away, because mm-hmm. it'll prove that we are not as evolved as the ancients were.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything is spiraling down. That's how it is. That's
well,
how it is until the Lord returns. It's going to stay that way.
Well, there's this aspect. And I'd like us to move, you know, to this for a moment, at least for a moment, in that Freemasonry seems to have taken on the nature of alchemy, the nature of magic, and magic ritual, and that leads to sacrifice. And then,
well, alchemy has nothing to do with that.
No, that's not how I mean it. I'm okay. Saying I see this progression that they are privately, secretly using some of this knowledge for their own purposes as means of gaining or acquiring more power over the rest of Earth's population, those outside of their inner circle. In fact, even many within their own organization. If it wasn't so, they would be sharing this information with everyone for the purpose of holding back our enlightenment. Okay, so you have to admit that the element of a satanic nature or Luciferian, if you want to use that term, worship and ritual has permeated what they do. And it manifests itself in everything they do.
It's always been that way, Don. Nothing's changed. Ever since the fall, there's two forces at war with each other. The forces of light and good versus the forces of darkness and evil. Nothing's changed. Man, as mortals, are caught up in this war. We're just in the middle of a bigger game that we have, as far as the average person today, that's not very educated with reality. They don't have a clue. They don't have a clue about what's going on all around them. But everything you're describing is just that pattern, exactly how it's been ever since the beginning. It's the same old pattern, forces of good versus the forces of evil. And every civilization, every single one up to now, even ours, has gone through the same cycle. You start off good. You peak at some point, and then it's all downhill. And during when it goes all downhill, guess what? Everything's corrupt, and all kinds of vices abound. And as far as total lechery in every respect, and then the civilization's gone. And then the Lord will eventually start up a new one somewhere, so he can have his own place that will be for him, serving him, and he'll start it off, and then eventually it'll get infiltrated by the dark forces. They'll work their way in through the cracks, and then eventually establish themselves in everything and take it all over and destroy it and ruin it by the same old technique. Bring in all the vices, corrupt all the people, keep them in ignorance so they don't even know what they are and what they're not, as far as creation, what they are and what they are not. And totally, if they can, of course, get their souls at the same time, that's their ultimate agenda. But other than that, it's all about corruption through vices. And look at our country today. So nothing's changed. It's the same old thing. And we're in a downward spiral. And so therefore, the evil forces are clearly abounding.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is the Freemasons as a group publicly claim that they have no affiliation, and they use the first three lodges, the Blue Lodge degrees that I mentioned earlier, as examples that they don't. But then there's nothing else beyond that. I mean, they talk about the all-seeing eye and they're leaving one with the impression that this is all just rumor and that they have nothing to do with characters like Anton LaVey and satanic worship. Yet all these people are known to have been Masons, you know.
Yes.
So
yes.
So you have this hypocrisy going on. That's the essence of what I'm saying.
What you have is, and they're always hypocrites. Nothing's changed. The Lord himself accused them all of being hypocrites numerous times.
Uh-huh.
And nothing's changed at all. Yes, they are blatant hypocrites. But they're under the guise of being a Mason or this or that. They're devil worshippers. They're Luciferians. And that's what they are. They're not into the original intent of Freemasonry, which was to build individual freedom, which this country established, because no other country in the world gave their citizens sovereignty, ultimate individual rights that any king of any country would have exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are the antithesis of all that, posing as being Freemasons, but they're not Freemasons, Don, in the original intent of the original schools when they started in Europe under the term Freemasonry. And so, sure, that's exactly our predicament. And like every other period in history, the way out of it is very simple. If the Americans in this country today would only just start to break away from the devil system and assume their own independence and start living virtuously, then these dark clouds would disappear virtually overnight, because they need you caught up in the vices in order to conquer you and to destroy you. That's the only way they can get us. That's why they have to introduce the vices every time when during the fall of a civilization on the downward spiral. It's always due to vices everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the ultimate tool to do it with. And that's where we are now. So the Americans have to snap out of this, live very virtuously, because again, virtue is power. That's what virtue is. That's what it means. It means power. It doesn't mean being goody two shoes or anything like that. It means being powerful. Because when we're powerful, the devils can't touch us. They'll try, but we are afforded the divine protection that all virtuous beings have. All the good angels are touchable by devils. Why? Because they're virtuous. The ultimate of virtuosity. Just like their master, their king, their Lord, Jesus is. And so when we learn to live like those angels and acquire those virtues, then we are invulnerable to those kind of attacks. That's the beauty of it. That's how simple it really is for the turnaround of the United States to get back on track again. And they don't want the people to know this. All they want to know is the vices are good. Vices are always good. Self-pleasure, all that kind of stuff. And thinking about number one, you, and that's it. Being selfish, greedy, lazy. And, of course, a glutton, whether it's food or drugs or alcohol. All those elements there will destroy the body as a temple. And once the body's no longer a temple, then the spirit will suffer, and that's when they got us. Because we have to keep our spirits very strong in order to be resilient to their attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way our spirits are very strong is by living virtuously. And our body will be a temple when we're living virtuously. And therefore, the spirit will be very strong and therefore invincible to such attacks.
I'd like to read a small a portion of something to you regarding the mysteries of magic. Okay, this is taught in the Masonic lodges, and I'd like your opinion on this. But after I read this, I want to make one small comment too, and tie it into something, because this is what comes through. This is taken from page 428 of the Mysteries of Magic. What is more absurd and more insipious than to attribute the name of Lucifer to the devil, that is, to personified evil? The intellectual Lucifer is the spirit of intelligence and love. It is the Paraclete. It is the Holy Spirit, while the physical Lucifer is the great agent of universal magnetism. To personify evil and exalt it into an intelligence which is the rival of God, into a being which can understand but love no more, this is a monstrous fiction. To believe that God permits this evil intelligence to deceive and destroy his feeble creatures is to make God more wicked than the devil. By depriving the devil of the possibility of love and repentance, God forces him to do evil. Moreover, a spirit of error and falsehood can only be a folly which thinks, nor does it deserve indeed the name of spirit. The devil is God's antithesis, and if we define God as he who is, we must define his opposite as he who is not. Now, there seems to be quite a bit of dichotomy in this statement. It seems to jump from one side to the other.
Well, one error right there, as is often made, is that they try to equate the devil as being the opposite of God, and that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no opposite to God. But God, as the sole creator of all things, has legions of workers that do his bidding. They're known as angels, and Lucifer was one of the head angels for the longest time.
He was the chief musician.
Before the fall.
Yeah.
And so, he's clearly not God's opposite. He's an angel of God, a son of God. So let's dispel that myth right away. God has no opposites. There's nothing that can rival God.
Yeah, what we have, yes. Now that leads us to this point that I'd like to make. And then we'll, I want to bring up the fact that we have our city, our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., is laid out with Masonic symbols.
Mm-hmm.
The Pentagon, the same. In fact, even the World Trade Center, which spelled out the number 11, if you looked at each of the two twin towers.
Number 11 is a good number.
I know, but they put the World Trade Center, which they brought down, brought down in a controlled demolition. They brought it down at the corner of Church and Liberty. That is very profound.
Yeah, there's a lot of irony in there.
Well, they put it up at the corner of Church and Liberty, knowing that at some point that they would bring it down.
Yeah.
Symbolically, as if this was, the construction of and the use of the buildings was the first part of the ritual and ultimately the final chapter, which was the seizing of power, like you said, from us.
That's right. That's right. We are the government in this country, so they stole it from us.
And the compass symbol that they often use in satanic drawings or the layouts of the streets, like in Washington D.C., really has a double meaning because they're using that sort of as a sexual type of representation.
Well, when you said a double meaning, Don, you're on to it there, but that interpretation is one, but not necessarily the real double meaning. For example.
Oh, I know that. I know that.
Okay.
Just speaking of, that's part of the magic that they're incorporating into all this. In other words.
Okay. Yeah.
Part of it, not all of it.
Okay. Now, let me, because what you're saying, Don, has triggered something that I'd like to cover real quick, because the magic, quote-unquote magic, is science. Science is magic, magic is science. As a scientist, I know that perfectly well through all my experiences alone just working at IBM for almost 13 years. And, for example, when they see a circle with the two inverted pyramids interlocked, right? And it would be, therefore, a six-pointed star, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, that's interpreted today as, devil worshiping. But it's not necessarily devil worshiping at all, because it's also known as the Seal of Solomon. And Solomon was not a devil worshiper, but he did worship false gods in the end of his reign, but not before. And he had that symbol since he was a kid, because he was a master magician, quote-unquote, master scientist. And so what that symbol refers to, without the circle around it, the six-pointed star, the two inverted pyramids, is the Trinity. The three forces that hold all creation together. The positive force, which is masculine. The negative force, which has nothing to do with negativity the way we use it today, is, oh, he's negative.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's negativity as a force.
It's just a polarity, yeah.
Yes, it's a polarity. That's feminine. And then the third force, which is neutral, even though it's not neutral the way we think of neutral, meaning has no effect. It's neutral is a force.
It's both polarities combined.
Well, yes, it is kind of, it is that, but because of that, it's a brand new force.
Mm-hmm.
And hence, there's three forces that hold it all, make creation hold together like glue. And all the ancients knew that. in the yin-yang symbol, for example. Everybody that uses the yin-yang symbol today doesn't realize it's really a representation of the Trinity, not yin-yang, but the three forces. Because the little dot on both sides of the yin-yang symbol, those little two dots, that represents the third force. And so people, that's not well known today. And so the ancients knew all this. Now, the inverted pyramids with the three forces is as above, so below. It's a law. Just like gravity and everything else, it's a law. And I discovered that when I was working at IBM one day, running a scanning electron microscope, doing some semiconductor technology work on a silicon substrate, which is sand. Okay, the chips are made on silicon. Silicon is just from sand. And so sure enough, when I had to do some engineering work, troubleshooting, so I had to use a scanning electron microscope around 100,000 magnification, gold-plated the substrate, and then I loaded it in. And what did I see on the silica at 100,000 magnification? I seen a sandy beach. That's what I had seen. And I sat there in my chair saying, thank you, Lord. You're always educating me. No matter where I am, you're enlightening me. You're showing me how everything is. And I realized right then and there, as above, so below.
Did you see any surfers on that sandy beach?
There was everything but the ocean. And so as above, so below means the macro is in the micro, and the micro is in the macro. And that's how it all is. And everything down here is a reflection of something above us, but we're a shadowy reflection because we're in an imperfect state. And so that symbol just means as above, so below, a law. Now, since it's a law, it means there's science to it, and where there's science, you can manipulate it now for good or bad.
Mm-hmm. Michael, I want to bring another point up here before we run out of time. See, the hour's flying again. Recently, just very, very recently, the Vatican, through their ordained astronomer, has released information to their Catholic followers, and I suppose this is intended to reach the masses through the Catholics. Even there's a ritual in that delivery that there are likely aliens, particularly on Mars, or there are species, if you want to call it that, intelligent life forms that we are going to have to confront. And so it's okay. It's been approved by the Pope that Catholics consider that there's a strong likelihood of life on at least Mars and maybe on some other planets, and that they're making this official announcement that that's okay, God understands, as if now the Pope has more to say about this than God himself does.
That's right.
I mean, it's insane.
Yes,
it's
it is, Don.
Absolute insanity. And when I heard about this message,
it really is. But you know, Don, you know what that message is reminding me of? The Illuminati plan. And I'm going to sidetrack real quick to show divine activity in the affairs of man. When Weishaupt in 1776, May 1st, sends out the courier with the Illuminati plans for global conquest, what happened to that courier? He got struck by a lightning bolt, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that wasn't divine providence, and then, of course, he fell into the hands of the authorities. They got their hands on the plans, and they started arresting a lot of people and suppressed the Illuminati for quite a while. And so there's some divine activity right there. But as far as with the church and this announcement, Don, that fits into the plans on the unification of the planet under this globalism, how they're going to unite everybody, how they're going to make us all come together. Well, we need an outside threat.
Alien invasion, for example.
You got it, Don.
Yes.
And boy, that's not falling right into place, huh?
Yeah. Well, we know that. In fact, you know, if you've heard any of my interviews with Jim Murray, who's on regularly as my Friday guest.
Oh,
my,
great shows.
My science expert, so to speak.
Sure, he's good.
you know, he feels the same way as I do. I mean, he goes back to Tesla and his research and his openness about where much of the information he was getting was coming from. Now, a lot of this is not out in the public domain. So it's interesting knowing that Jim has not only talked to or studied under some of the associates of Tesla, like Gene Carini. Now, Jim didn't meet Tesla. However, he had his hands on much of his lab work, saw original documents, conducted just a tremendous amount of research to find out what he had discovered and what he was doing. And he began to notice a pattern that Tesla knew so much about what was beyond the normal scientific knowledge and understanding and consciousness. Even when he presented things, he met all this disbelief. But, you know, behind the scenes, they were rubbing their palms together, you know, in anticipation of getting their hands on all this technology. And it was done early on in his career. Again, it coincides with even some of the research I'm doing today about certain political leaders and who they were associated with in the course of them being given their assignments, we'll say. Mm-hmm. And that will be, again, I'm speaking cryptically in a sense, but anyone out there that knows what I'm about to release, the information I'm about to release, pretty mind-blowing, and it's going to show that these gifted scientists, like Tesla, for example, were revealing higher truths to us, and in our ignorance, this slipped through the hands of mankind and went into the pockets of these few individuals, these secret societies.
That's right, the controllers.
Yes, and now that's manifesting itself. Instantly, I knew what this message was, but this is their way also of countering the multiple spaceships that are being seen around the world, some belonging to man, and and many, many more coming from outside.
Absolutely. We're getting geared up for the big showdown, Don.
Yes.
The big climax that the Lord showed me for many years when I was young, mainly on the dream side. And it's unbelievable, but it's all coming together just like you showed me. A lot of UFO activity. And speaking of Tesla, you know, the History Channel, I just was watching earlier, they did a segment on Tesla, which I couldn't believe, and it was really, really good. They revealed a lot. So everybody listening, look for the History Channel, and you'll be able to come up to speed to some degree with Tesla if you're not familiar with him by watching that program. It was very good. And what you'll all appreciate is that this genius, who was like a man from the future, right, Don?
Mm-hmm.
And what he gave the United States would have launched the United States into the golden age that the rest of the world would have been envious of. And ultimately, like Washington stated to General McClellan in that legend of the appearance of Washington to McClellan at Gettysburg.
Is this before the bad bullet? Or
no, this was General McClellan of the Civil War. And McClellan's vision of George Washington, when the Southern Army was about to take over Pennsylvania and get right into Virginia, and so Washington was supposed to be the hand that saved McClellan by showing him the strategy and help and enabling McClellan to outmaneuver them.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, Tesla brought us the gifts of technology that is God technology, no pollution, ultimately free, cheap energy without harming the environment, in harmony with everything. That would have launched the golden age, anti-gravity, as you and Jim have covered numerous times. All of that would have been at our disposal 100 years ago. Imagine today what we would be living like, never pollution, the environment thriving, no animals dead in the road because we have anti-gravity, no oil pollution anywhere, no smog, nothing like that, no plastic crap. That's what Tesla would have, he would have if we were only able to utilize his inventions, we'd be there already. We'd be living Star Trek right now. And so that's what God had already wanted us to have at the turn of the century. And it was denied us by the Luciferians.
Because well,
the age...
Excuse me? I was just going to make a comment. In a way, we are living Star Trek. We've got Klingons anyway.
Yes, it's still coming here. Yeah, it's still catching up to us. That's right, Don. There's no avoiding the future. But it would have been here 100 years ago if the Luciferians wouldn't have suppressed Tesla, ruined him, and kept for themselves all of his secrets, and are utilizing all that technology for themselves to this very day.
Well, Jim adeptly described how much of his technology was compartmentalized in ways that they were not very likely to be able to put some of his best inventions together in a working model, just because he knew that they
that's
would
right.
be misused and abused.
Yeah,
used by this, you know, the power brokers, so to speak, against everyone else.
Yeah, he caught on to them. And he, of course, the Nazis were after him. Everybody was after him and his secrets. So he was very savvy to all that. Yep, so he became very coded and encrypted in all his notes and baffled mostly everybody that tried to figure out what he was up to.
Now, what interesting point you made, too, and about the Nazis, because, you know, I'll agree 100% that they were the recipients of a major portion of his research and his technological advancements, but they were not the sole ones. And
right.
And as I pointed out in the article that I had written somewhat over a year ago, that touched on how they had stolen his technology and even murdered him, there was a connection that I was able to draw on the basis of who Tesla's father was. Tesla's father was a priest, and in a sense, he was a Catholic priest, and he had access to the Vatican Library. And Nikola was able, as a young boy, to go to the Vatican and gain access to some of these secret science books that they had in their library.
Hey, Don, let me mention before I forget, hold your thought. I have a great movie on Tesla from the Yugoslavians, made in Europe. It's excellent. And anybody interested, all they need to do is contact you, Don, and we'll set them up with it, free copies. And, of course, you can get one for yourself as well. It's an excellent movie. And lastly, before you get back to what your line of thought was, on the History Channel, you know what's very interesting? I wasn't aware of this one, but they claim that at Tesla's birth in Serbia, there was an incredibly unusual, powerful electrical storm.
Yes, I think I remember hearing something about that, too.
You know, lightning bolts were flashing everywhere. Now, isn't that perfect for Tesla? For his arrival on the scene?
Yeah, exactly. And that was the crux of the majority of
that's
his
right.
research and his inventions. Not
that's
he
right.
wasn't limited to that, but
that know, was the center of it all, that's right.
It was the focal point, yeah.
Yes.
But I found it interesting because here's this young boy who has access to the Vatican Library. Now, do you think that went unnoticed? Obviously not. And so the Vatican's hidden role behind the scenes was there then as much as it was in earlier prior history to Tesla and still remains today. The thing
sure.
is that their biggest fear was that the rest of mankind outside of their inner circle or circles, and I think of the Olympic rings in that sense, they underestimated that there would be those who would wake up. Now they think that they've handled that every contingency of anyone developing any consciousness higher than what they would like, but there are just some that they're not able to ensnare. Now
you can't stop God.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So they're really setting themselves up. But my general impression of this statement was, my goodness, you're now giving God permission.
Right.
It's the way the message was delivered, it didn't sound like this would have been a message from God, but this was a message from the Pope saying that, you know, God would understand. God would have to go along with this plan because this came from the Pope.
Right, exactly. And he's the authority now.
Yes, he has the upper hand.
That's right.
I mean, this is part of this downward spiral that I was talking
about.
Sure
it is. Absolutely.
And just the fact that the Catholic Church, as large as it is and as wealthy as it is and as tied into our I don't know if modern history is the right term, but since the time of Christ.
On
earth. Mm-hmm. And their compulsion to control the rest of the planet through religion, which is really it's just a cultic practice, and
that's right.
In how they practice it and how it's disseminated to the people and to the associations of whom they do business with.
Sure, they use it just like politics, Don.
Yes. So we have all these dichotomies going on, and you have the regular Catholics that are faithfully trusting that the head of their church is the head of their faith, when in reality they're not even practicing or demonstrating that faith that they profess.
That's very true. Their saving grace is that a lot of the decent Catholics are just that. They're decent, good people, living virtuously to the best of their ability, have a devotion for the Lord, and that's their saving grace, not aware that they're being misled, that the shepherd is really a wolf. They're not catching on to that yet.
Mm-hmm. Now, we had these other aspects, and in terms of metaphysics, there is some good in groups like the Rosicrucians, but also mm-hmm. there's a lot of perversion of the science, of the metaphysics, of the spirituality, and of Christianity. It goes back to the Middle Ages, but it's interesting how in just recent years, let's say in the last 20 to 30 years, it seems like Rosicrucianism or the Rosicrucian faith has really gone underground, as if it has withered, as if it has shrunk. I don't know if you have perceived that or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, Don, absolutely. I think that's really very astute, Don, that you're pointing that out. And what you have here is that, just like we covered a couple weeks ago, you see, it's the schools known as Freemasonry, Rosicrucians, and all that from the European Middle Ages roughly onward, that was just another means of perpetuating the truth that's been going on since the beginning of time. Through all the mystery schools, worked its way into Europe, and it was able to perpetuate itself in that fashion through Europe. But like everything else, it's just a vessel, and it served its purpose, and it's no longer the way to transmit the knowledge anymore. And so it served its purpose, and naturally, it's fading out.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I didn't mention the Jesuits or Opus Dei or any of the offshoots of those groups that have, you know, like the ones that...
I don't know if they're really even offshoots, Don. They're just more extensions, branches, vines of the Catholic Church itself and its agenda.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if there ever had been really a correlation between them and, say, for example, the Rosicrucians.
Well, I think in a sense there was, if you go back to the time of the Crusades, these groups eventually said, hey, wait a minute, we are so powerful, and we are the ones that are actually raiding the cities, burning cities, stealing all the wealth, raping the women, gaining all this power, and giving it to the Pope as a tribute, just mm-hmm. for recognition. We're yes. missing the point here. We can become powerful too. And that's how the Jesuits moved in, but they did it in a very dark way.
Mm-hmm.
Opus Dei from Spain, the same thing. And now here in the United States, particularly in California, we have the Ordo Templi Orientis, or the OTO, which is a very satanic form of this.
Oh, yeah, that's a Leicester Crowley activity.
Yes. So And then again, now you mentioned someone that has ties to Freemasonry too. You say these secret groups are all interwoven together, and it goes to Skull and Bones also.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Absolutely. But the terms today, the way they're applied and stuff, it's all homogenized today, but in their heyday, they were distinctly different.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we grew up reading stories or hearing stories about the knights in shining armor, King Arthur's Round Table, and the Three Musketeers. And what's interesting is the Three Musketeers used swords, didn't they?
Yeah, I know. That was always the irony of that one, huh?
Yeah.
They didn't use the muskets too often.
Well, they had bad musket balls going around in those days.
It was still an early technology. The sword was still more reliable, I think.
Yeah. No, but, I mean, you know, no one ever questioned that. They were called the Musketeers, and they didn't have muskets. I kept waiting to see the muskets.
You got it. That's right. That was always funny. Definitely a good point on that one. But as far as the original, the schools, they're totally different today than they were back in their heyday. Just like today, when you go back to your high school or college, and you'll see it's totally different than what it was like when you were just there, 10, 20, 30 years ago? And so imagine the changes over 100 years, 200 years. The names may be still the same of the school, but they're totally different.
When you said 10, 20, 30 years ago, you weren't referring to me. You were talking to the listening audience, right?
Yes. And
okay.
I figured it was only that recent for you as well.
Oh, no, you have to go back further than that. But, well, I wanted to bring that up because it seems like there's a play of that power going on various levels.
And absolutely, Don.
Because of my recent research, I mean, I see a direct connection to the timeline we are in right now, and I thought it'd be worthwhile to bring it up because I just have more substantiation for what many were theorizing on. I've got actual substantiation of.
Oh yes, and your work is going to be very important in nailing down the evidence to tie it all together to prove, you know, the grand conspiracy and how interwoven it all is. Don, your work is going to definitely help cement all that. So I'm looking forward to seeing it all published. It's going to be great, and hopefully it's going to get a lot of exposure. Because that'll be the key for all that excellent work of yours to being very effective in helping people and our country steer through this dark time.
Well, I was asked to look at it, and so I turned to the source, and I was shown things in increments, and there were periods of time where the information just flooded through me. It came through so quickly, you know, I've always said that I'm able through this gift and a little bit of intellect and a lot of perseverance to find the needle in the haystack, but it's turned into finding the piece of hay in the needle stack.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
it's a different thing now, you know.
Sure.
And it's not me. I'm the messenger. I'm the one that's
right. Yep, that's your job, Don. That's one of your knacks, and we're lucky to have you around because you got a great ability at diving in between all the cracks and finding that little gem of information that helps tie in everything so we can get the big picture and all realize what's going on. So you're playing your role. We're all playing our role. That's the beauty of it. We're all here at an individual level serving either the forces of light or the forces of darkness. The Master, the Lord himself said, the King of the Angels, Jesus himself said, man cannot serve two masters, he'll love one and despise the other.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all playing our roles and some better than others, and you're definitely excelling, Don.
Well, and the truth in the statement that you just made, and I don't mean about me, but about, you know, loving two masters or following two masters, is that we are going to come, or we are rapidly approaching the point where we are going to have to make a decision.
You got it.
We're going to be forced with making a choice.
For those that have already, for all those that have not made it yet, anyway.
Mm-hmm. And that,
right,
exactly.
Right.
And that was going to be my next statement, is that we should have, most of us, hopefully would have already made that choice, and so we'll not be affected by the mere necessity to have to
exactly.
be confronted to make a choice. And we're talking
right.
about allegiance, a thing about allegiance and following the next trick, the next bag of tricks, if you want to call it that.
That's right, Don. And that next bag of tricks will have the people that haven't made the critical decision in their lives yet. They'll be forced to make it under tremendous duress, which will make it even more difficult for them to choose the right master to serve.
Mm-hmm. And it's so simple, really, because they have no guarantees in making the choice that may seem like the easiest
sure.
way out, the most convenient way.
Yes, they're the forces that are always giving a stone for bread, as the Lord would say. You know, they're trying to give you darkness for light. And so it's obvious to us because we already see all through this, but for those that aren't aware of this yet, they're going to have to come to these terms and decisions under tremendous duress, which is going to cloud their judgment, and I'm afraid many will make the wrong decision at that critical juncture in their lives.
Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, in closing here, I have to just share this with you and the listening audience, that the recent research I have done has taken me so deep into revelation about how things really are, that I can't even listen to these debates and these discussions about the current presidential candidates. I would do better to watch Merry Melody cartoons or maybe even one of these poker shows on TV. Of course, I can't stand that either, because that's just more mind control.
You're better off watching the real Three Stooges.
Yes. Yes. Well, Michael, next time we got to book you for another show. I think have we yet or no? We haven't
yet. Yes, Don. Yep. Yeah, we're scheduled again in a couple weeks, Don.
Okay. In fact, that's the 29th of May. I just went right to the date. How do you like that? It was invisible until I clicked on the date on my little calendar. Yeah, that's right. You're scheduled for the 29th.
So that's great. I'll look forward to that one tremendously.
I think we'll have a lot. There's going to be a lot transpiring in the next couple of weeks, so we're looking at like 15 days here. Mm-hmm. We're going to see something transpire in that time, and maybe we can continue on with this conversation.
Absolutely, Dan. There's a lot more to cover still, so that'd be great.
How are things in the land of herbs these days? Doing good?
Springtime, herbs are flourishing. Everything's greening up. It's a beautiful time of year. The life forces are flowing and starting to wax strong, and everything's great.
Well, I want to urge the listeners to visit my website, directlightproductions.com, and go to the sponsors page and click on, in the Master Index, click on Michael Anthony's Private Stock, and find out some things about some wonderful herbs that Michael has available to you, and there's contact information for Michael Anthony right on that page. And with that, Michael, unfortunately, I got to say goodnight to you and to the listening audience, but I look forward to your next appearance on the show.
Thank you, Don. Thanks for inviting me. A lot of fun.
Keep in touch. Now, the first part of the Three Stooges Go to Washington is coming out this week, probably by the end of the week. Hopefully, we're hoping that. It's a monstrous piece, and I've given them a lot of work to fit that into the paper. It's just part one, and so I want to get your feedback on that, too. Pretty pretty amazing research, though, I have to say. I mean, the paths that I was led down were very unexpected, even though I knew I was going to be going into the land of Oz, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to thank you, Michael, and look forward to seeing you on the 29th.
Thank you. Looking forward to seeing your published report there.
All right. Thank you. And folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. Our guest tonight, Michael Anthony, will be with us again on May 29th. Be sure to check out that show and tell your friends about it. And in the meantime, I want to wish everyone a very peace-filled, love-filled, and light-filled good night.
Details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.